You are listening to episode number 167 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
Now with 100% less taser.
Uh-oh. Are you going to be mad about that?
If I could save time in a bottle, first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you. If I could make days last forever, if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure, and then again I would spend them with you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to yet another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. After a week off through the Memorial Day, we are back and better than ever. We all hope you had a great Memorial Day as well. But first and foremost, before we get into the nitty-gritty, because good lord, there was a lot of nitty-gritty this past
week. Holy shit, it exploded!
I am your host, Ben, a.k.a. Marvelous Iggy. Joining me from the great state of Oklahoma, whose Oklahoma City Thunder got bounced in the playoffs a couple of nights ago. Jonathan. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Don't remind me of that, but yeah, I'm glad to be back. I've had some real-life issues, you know, get in the way, so you know how that goes. And, yeah, I'm not happy with the Thunder bowing out to your
Thunder
San Antonio jerks.
San Antonio Spurs, standard of excellence.
But they'll still be better than the Heat. That's all I'm going to say. Well, but anyway, enough NBA.
All right, and of course, joining me from the great state of Massachusetts, the man who is it?
I'm not sure.
It's a Commonwealth.
What?
Why? We're not technically a state. We're a Commonwealth.
Quadruple equal then?
There's like four states in the U.S. that are actually Commonwealths. I don't know the exact distinction, but we're pretty much the same
thing.
This
is where I show how dumb I am. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, we're technically the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Is that why it's called the So now I feel better when I say the great state of Texas. All right, awesome.
So yeah, you're actually a state. We're a Commonwealth.
Wow, who knew?
Yeah.
Now when I go to Massachusetts, I have to say I'm visiting the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Yeah, but the thing is, we like calling
ourselves. Rhode Island has to be a Commonwealth, right?
I don't think so, but it's got some long, obnoxious name. It's not
even. How is Rhode Island not a Commonwealth? It's so tiny.
I don't know. All I know is that we like to call ourselves Bay Staters, so calling ourselves Bay Commonwealthers doesn't really roll off the tongue as well, so that's where we find ourselves.
All right. So, in regards to that, we are the Mighty Warriors C Marvel Podcast. We are a Marvel podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, comics, movies, video games, TV shows, animation, porn, as you saw last week, 2 weeks ago. But before we dive into the negative, because Lord knows there's a lot of negative stuff that came out.
Oh, shit.
We finally have Thanatos, however you want to pronounce it, because I'm not even talking about the same character anymore. We finally have an actor for Thanos for at least Guardians of the Galaxy. Pretty sure going to be for Avengers 3. Reveal who will be the man behind the chin. In Guardians of the Galaxy this summer, B-Rai.
Yes, the man with the chin that can kill was once the man with the fucked up face in Jonah Hex, none other than Josh Brolin, ladies and gentlemen. Taking over the role from Damien Poitier, who cameoed as Thanos at the end of the first Avengers flick, Josh Brolin has been cast as the, is he a Titan, I believe? Not an Eternal, right?
He's a Titan.
He is technically an Eternal.
Yeah, that's right.
He's an Eternal? Okay, he's from Titan.
He's from Titan, but he's technically an Eternal.
Okay, so yeah, he'll be playing the Eternal in Guardians of the Galaxy come August.
But I heard it's only voice. Like, we won't see him.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's this late in the game, because they've had Guardians ready to tee up for a while now.
Well, so they could always just shoot like a day. And, like, him in the costume. Like,
well, yeah, but even still, I felt like it would have been a little bit late in the game. But, I don't know how things go on set, so who knows. But, yeah, an article on James Gunn's post-production process reported the scene with Thanos on a rocket throne in Act 3 of Guardians of the Galaxy, which suggests an appearance long enough that someone is going to have to voice the Mad Titan, someone that could take the part in Avengers 3, hopefully as a major villain. And thus we have Josh Brolin.
You know, he's not the pick nobody would have said. Nobody was saying despite that he has the chin for it, Josh Brolin, because of, you know, just because of what he plays. That he whenever I see Josh Brolin, he always seems like the kind of guy who plays the rough cowboy, and he's played rough cowboys.
He also played Jay.
I really liked that
guy in the remake of True Grit too. What's his face? Driving me nuts.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, I mean, Gangster Squad. He always plays that stern hero badass.
A rough and tumble lawman.
He doesn't take shit, man. I can't. If you can do a Josh Brolin impersonation, leave us a voicemail. I don't know how, because I don't know how to get it working yet. but he was great as impersonating impersonating Tommy Lee Jones in Men in Black 3. I thought he did a great job there, and you know, I feel that he could do it. I think he could have so much fun with it, and I think it could be great. You know, he has the voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you agree ever with that, speak.
I can see him voicing Thanos.
You know, like I think, and I mean, I don't think he's just gonna be the voice. I think he's gonna be full on body. So like, I think he could have enough screen presence to carry the character that is Thanos. At least that's just my opinion.
Hey, it gives me more hope for Guardians. So we'll just have to see how it goes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think he's gonna be integral. I mean, there's no way they play their cards that early.
Whether or not Josh Brolin shows up in a full-on role or just a voice role, Guardians will be fantastic either way. That is what I maintain. Taser, wherever you are out there, getting into trouble, choking women. I don't know what you do in your time.
Well, let's not go there.
Keep choking chicken to fry it up. I don't know what you do. I will say, however, I don't hate this casting. There are a lot of worse people I could imagine playing Thanos, but at the same time, I'm not thrilled, and only for one real reason. It has nothing to do with Josh Brolin as an actor. I actually know Damien Poitier. I've seen a lot of the stuff he's in. I've seen him as an actor. He doesn't really do big starring roles. He's more of a bit player more than anything else. I would have loved to see him take on this role full-time, because I recall one appearance. He was in an episode of The Sons of Anarchy, and he played this big, burly sort of enforcer for this matriarch of crime in this rundown project. And he was imposing, has a deep, deep voice that threatens you, and he just looks menacing. And I would have loved to see him carry over into doing the Avengers, because that's kind of their thing, where they take actors who aren't really not top tier. You know, we've seen it done with different actors before, where they bring in lesser-known talent and build them up. But this is just... I would have loved to see him step up and take over the role of Thanos full-time. But, obviously, that's not the way they went. They decided Josh Brolin was a better fit, and I can't really argue. He's a very good actor. I've loved him in a lot of stuff he's done. I think he'll do the role a lot of credit. So,
John, what do you think?
Like I said, when I heard it and saw it on Facebook, I wasn't going, what the hell? That's not Thanos, and you know, that kind of thing. You know, get the accent going. But, I actually will say that when I heard that he was on there, I was like, yes, I think he'll do a good job. Again, it's, of course, it's that wait and see thing, because there's a lot of things about Guardians that, you know, and I'm not going to play the role of Taser here, because I actually do look forward to the movie, unlike him.
Oh, thank God.
But there are issues I'll have with the movie, but I don't think Thanos is going to be one of them, because Brolin is a really good actor. He was probably about the only good thing to say about Jonah Hex, and loved him.
I don't know. Death. Megan Fox is a prostitute, hit pretty close to home, I think.
Well, that was her life story, but that's the whole other podcast. But yeah, my hatred for her is well known for a lot of people. But I see him doing a really good job. He's done spectacular in every role that he's been in, and what I've seen. And, you know, he gives me that good, solid glimmer that Thanos is in the right hands. So we'll just, because, you know, he's going to be really hard to do right. But their casting choices over at Marvel Studios over the last few years have pretty much been hit, you know, spot on, you know, hitting them out of the park. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. This just seems like another one of those really good casting calls. So we'll see you in August.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Okay, so that's the good news. Let us know what you think about Josh Brolin about being Thanos in the comments. So let's get into the nitty-gritty. Starting with the least, hopefully, most controversial news. Brian.
So, in case y'all don't know, Marvel's planning to produce various shows for Netflix as exclusive programming, and one such film series that's teeing up quite nicely is Daredevil, or at least it was for a little while there. Some stuff did happen, some rumblings. One thing that worked in conjunction with another thing we'll get to, I think, coming up next after this subject, is that Drew Goddard, the man originally tapped to be the showrunner for the new Daredevil series, will not, in fact, be taking over showrunning duties anymore. That role will be turned over to Stephen S. DeKnight, who served as showrunner on 3 seasons of Spartacus on Stars. He's worked with Joss Whedon before on Angel and Buffy, and he's worked on Dollhouse as well as Smallville, so the man's got an impressive resume of stuff for television that he's worked on quite nicely. However, Goddard will still be executive producing the series despite not being a showrunner anymore. Also coming down the pipe, we have a bit of casting news. The blind lawyer from Hell's Kitchen has been cast, confirmed to be played by a young actor named Charlie Cox, whose previous credits include Tristan Thorne in Stardust and Owen Slater in Boardwalk Empire on HBO.
Sadly, neither one I've ever seen, so I have no clue who this guy is.
Yeah, he's not terribly popular, but he will be taking over the role nonetheless of Matt Murdock, a.k.a. Daredevil, the man without...
Drew Gosling for Daredevil.
Say Drew Gosling?
And, well, yeah.
I'd rather see Affleck back. Who
you mean Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling. Who's Drew Gosling? Is that a real guy? Has to be a real person.
I don't know.
Probably. Maybe he has a brother or something. I don't know.
Ryan Gosling for Matt Murdock, damn it.
Well, for a major motion picture, but
oh,
if we're going
on.
Television...
Fucking House of,
if we're
fucking,
going television,
if
they
Netflix
can't afford
can
Ryan
afford
Gosling.
If Netflix can afford Kevin Spacey, Marvel can fucking afford Ryan Gosling for a couple
of No, that's what chewed up their budget, getting Kevin Spacey to go down on some
and
Duke.
And the show was fine. House of Cards is great, by the way. It's fucking awesome.
Sorry, bisexual threesomes ate up their budget for casting Ryan Gosling as Matt Murdock.
Spoilers,
so,
asshole.
I don't give a shit.
Cool.
So yeah, Daredevil happened. Ben, you are a man who finds Daredevil a fascinating character. Yes. What do you think of this?
I don't know because I don't know this guy. I mean, I'm gonna.
Well, okay, not even just that. What about Drew Goddard and exiting his?
I don't. You know what the thing is about like TV directors? I don't follow them. I just know that. He still tested a project. He's just not going to be like the person leading it, which means whatever vision he had, which we had no idea what it was to begin with, is not going to be there. So we don't know anything, so nothing is lost or gained in this, in my opinion. I don't really have an opinion on it because I don't really know. Does he say – I'd imagine he hasn't said why he stepped down.
No, it was sort of – I don't want to say it was in conjunction with the thing we're coming up next on, but it was just, it happened within the same time span. People think it is the same cause, which is creative differences or what have
yeah,
you.
Yeah, but I think that's assuming a lot. Maybe just work stuff. Or
well, it is, but it's also just, you know, it's a difficult thing to navigate because Marvel keeps like a real tight leash on all their PR.
Yeah, you've seen the Arsenio Hall
Oh, yeah, with Don Cheadle.
Yeah, where he
I think as a teaser, laser dot shows up on the forehead.
Yeah. And like, yeah. I was like, no, we're good. No, we don't. No, are you sure?
It doesn't surprise me that not a lot has leaked out about what exactly went down. I will say that, whatever happened, for better or worse, Drew Goddard, I can't say I've seen a bunch of his stuff. I enjoyed Cabin in the Woods when I saw it. Mm-hmm. I also know Stephen S. DeKnight. When the announcement originally came out, I'm like, Stephen S. DeKnight, why have I heard that name before? Like, I knew in the back of my head. Then I realized I saw him on Smallville, and I'm like, oh, no, because he was not a major part of the better seasons of Smallville, so that kind of concerned me. But, again, I don't know his stuff from Whedon's Buffy, Angel, Dolls. I've never seen Spartacus, so I really can't say one way or the other how this guy is aged as a showrunner. All I really have to go on is the Smallville years, which do not bode well, but I'm willing to play the optimist here. I'm willing to say Marvel knows what they're doing. As far as Charlie Cox goes, I'm in the same boat as you guys. Never seen him before, never heard of him. He's kind of a fresh pick for me, so. But, Daredevil, I'm
like,
willing
he
to
has the face. He has that lovable, like,
I'm Matt trying Murdock to picture it behind rose-tinted glasses. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to see the sunglasses and the cane in his hand. I'm trying to envision
it's
that.
It's hard. I think we have to see him on set with either in lawyer or in costume.
Yeah, which just piques my interest in what they're going to do for a costume for Daredevil. I'm really want to see what they're going to do with that.
I hope they do the yellow and red one.
Well, they might for the first, but I think they'll stick to
the...
That
would be so cool to see that one.
They'll probably stick to the classic, but otherwise... But
hey, hey, the classic's awesome. All that sleek black red, dark red.
Oh, yeah. But on that front runner thing is... it obviously doesn't sound like the like what they've had problems with over at Walking Dead with the Frank Darabont and some of the others. So I'm kind of just going to be like on the wait and see list on this because one, I don't have Netflix and so it'll be kind of hard for me to see it legal ways.
Well, I mean, I will say that Netflix does own like House of Cards is a Netflix show, but they're porting it. Not porting it. They're sending it to Blu-ray to DVD. So I wouldn't be surprised, especially this is the Marvel machine we're talking about, that we'll see, these all collected somehow. And they just won't be, like, it's just that if you want to watch them immediately, you got to have a Netflix subscription.
Yeah, and it's...
But I think, It's relatively good news. It's a little disappointing that Drew Goddard left, but I see it as nothing lost, nothing gained, because we really didn't know what he was doing.
But like you said, we didn't even really lose him. He's still hanging around the set.
Exactly. Plus, isn't this supposed to come out next year? So they got. I mean, granted, it's
June. Still an early design. So.
They got it. I got it.
They got time.
They got to get the ball moving, in my opinion. All right. So Drew Goddard left, but apparently we had one more guy leave Marvel, and this is one of the bigger hits.
Before Drew Goddard left Daredevil, another auteur, I guess you would say, left the project they were a part of. News came down May 23rd that Edgar Wright has departed Ant-Man over cited creative differences. Edgar Wright, as you know, had been pushing to be behind the Ant-Man project for some time, even before really there was a Marvel Cinematic Universe to build it on. He'd been jockeying to get a hold of this character and sort of create his vision of what the character would be and such. Now, there has been some press releases thrown out, and there has been some news come down. And one thing that we know at this point is that basically, in addition, all the sources say the film's key crew, the head of departments, things like that, departed when... First of all, production wasn't going to begin as scheduled on July 28th. That's one thing. Also, news a little bit more in depth as to why he left was apparently Kevin Feige, the guy who sort of runs the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he ordered revisions of the script that was co-written by Wright and Joe Cornish. According to sources, Wright had been willing to make revisions earlier in the process, but the new rewrites took place without his input. There's a quote here. I believe... Kevin Feige and his top lieutenants run Marvel with a singularity of vision, but when you take a true auteur and throw him into the mix, this is what you get, says a source. They don't want you to speak up too much or have too much vision. People who have never worked there don't understand how they operate, but if you trust them, they have an amazing track record, which of course seems like it's kind of beating around the bush in terms of they fucked up or we fucked up or this, that, and the other thing. And Marvel has been shown to be getting a little nervous. They say that Marvel insiders are sort of insisting that maybe they've gone already too far outside their comfort zone with Guardians of the Galaxy, and so they might be trying to rein in the sort of zaniness of the universe they're trying to create.
This was
all within a week.
Yeah.
That was all in 1 week.
And
of course, Drew Goddard left soon after that.
If you hire a guy to me, like Edgar Wright, who brings a certain flair to a movie, like, no disrespect to Jon Favreau or Kenneth Branagh, the guy who directed the first Captain America movie, who directed Rocketeer, whose name I can't remember right now. Those guys are, typical movie guys. They do excellent films. Edgar Wright has a certain visual, has a style that everybody knows and loves. Well, not everybody, but people know and love, rather.
It's endearing, I guess.
It's endearing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hot Fuzz, and all that stuff, and Shaun of the Dead.
Scott Pilgrim.
Even though that movie didn't do it's like there was a tweet I read that,
that movie was still amazing.
Yeah, I know, but it's like there was like there was a tweet where like somebody said like 30 million people were talking about it. Like where the fuck were you people during Scott Pilgrim's opening weekend? But at the same time, like if you hired Edgar Wright to direct Ant-Man, an obscure property as it is, you let Edgar Wright do what he wants to do and you figure out the continuity bullshit later. You know? And I feel like, you know what this reminds me of? And I'm surprised more people aren't calling Marvel out. This reminds me of all those, and forgive me for talking about them, the recent problems that the Distinguished Competition had with their sort of creative of like the people not liking what editorial, or in this case, the executives have to say, so they walk. You know, I mean, again, and also, this isn't the first time people have walked away from a movie. Ed Norton, Terrence Howard walked away. Jon Favreau, Kenneth Branagh, like a lot of directors aren't back for their sequels. And they still haven't skipped the beat. Again, I don't know if you can generate enough interest in an Ant-Man movie that's not directed by Edgar Wright. I don't know if you can.
He was almost bigger than the film itself that he was directing. The news especially, that, oh my God, Edgar Wright's directing a Marvel movie, you know? That was the big hook.
Especially when they had a guy that was announced to replace him, and then forgive me for not remembering his name, but...
Adam McKay.
Yeah, and then he's left.
Well, he said like it was just like, I don't know if I could fit into my schedule because he's got other projects.
Well, what's funny, too, is that earlier in the week, during the first press release when they announced his departure, Marvel said they already had a guy, and then negotiation bits came down later, but they hadn't had a director to replace him. So I'm wondering if that was just a cover-up or what was going on over there. But apparently, they said out of the gate they had someone new to direct in his place, but apparently they didn't. Or at least maybe he left quietly. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's just it's not good because, you know, like you said, Ant-Man's a very hard sell to begin with, you know, depending on how they're going to do them, which they probably would have to go the humor route with the more current version. And Edgar Wright would have been the perfect choice for that.
Yeah.
And he has an obvious love for comics and all that if you've obviously seen his previous, you know, works. And with him leaving, that kind of makes me wonder if they're even going to bother to try to do Ant-Man now. You know, they might not just scuttle it, you know, or at least or reformat it to where it's more, you know, the Hank Pym version, you know, tying into Avengers or something, and not be as wild and wacky as you probably were they were expecting. And, you know, if they are worried about having wild and wacky, then they should have, you know, toned down what they're showing for Guardians of the Galaxy, you know? Because you got to have a couple of licenses out there that are going to be different from the other parts of the universe. And
yeah, we're getting a taste of that with Guardians, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I just have this feeling that now they're good that they've lost Edgar Wright, and then they got this other guy who kind of came in and left, you know, pretty damn quick, whether it's scheduling issues or not. It's showing that obviously phase three is not going to be as smooth as the previous two phases. And, you know, something's going to give. I have a feeling Ant-Man may wind up being scuttled or totally, completely different and in regards to what they were initially going to try to do. And that is kind of a warning sign for me. But we'll, like I said, but we'll just have to see. I mean, nothing's really been filmed yet. And
they got a year to make the movie,
which is,
you know, I mean, it's Ant-Man, so it's not going to require the biggest of budgets, you know?
Yeah, but still, it's just, you know, I'm not necessarily was, you know, like somebody said, you know, a couple of years ago, who would have thought that we would actually be talking about and looking forward to a fucking Ant-Man film, you know, in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, and when they had Edgar Wright say this and wanted to do it, you're just like, yeah, I'll pay money to see that.
Yeah, which just makes that. Yeah. I don't think if they make a Guardian sequel, and this is just I'm throwing it out there. I don't think James Gunn's going to get invited back, no matter how successful it is. They haven't done it yet, except for Jon Favreau. He's the only guy, and Joss Whedon. There's the only two guys who've come back to direct Marvel sequels. So I would not be surprised if Guardians, even if it does well and it's critically acclaimed for its directing style, or especially if it's panned. You know,
yeah.
If that happens, because let's face it, that could happen too, because it might be different enough that I wouldn't be surprised if James Gunn does not come back. But that's all speculative right now. It's a disappointment. It's shocking.
But you gotta give Marvel credit though. They've got everything set up ready to go compared to the distinguished crapetition.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm sure they have a plan.
Which is sad considering they have a more established studio.
Yeah, I'm sure they have a plan. I'm sure. You know, I just feel that, like, maybe, you know, if you're gonna hire a director, know that they're gonna want to have their vision, and you shouldn't try to compromise their vision just because you wanted to fit in a continuity. That's all I'm saying. And if that's the case, then just stick to hiring guys who will play the fool, who will play the part of the director to move the movie universe along. If that's what you want, and that's fine. But don't hire Edgar Wright to play to that, because he's not going to do that, and he shouldn't have to. He should be allowed to bring his own flair into a movie like Ant-Man. And you need it, because you need Edgar Wright to sell that movie. I don't care how popular you think you can make your character is. You can make your character. He's still fucking Ant-Man. He's still small chips and potatoes compared to, say, Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, so that's all. Anything else, guys, before we move on to the most controversial topic?
Yeah, I think it's fine for me.
All right. As you know, that the Fantastic Four movie is well underway. We got a Black Johnny Storm. We got Kate Mara as Sue Storm. We got some dudes as Ben Grimm and Mr. Fantastic. But apparently there is some allegations going on, some mudslinging going on between Marvel Studios and Fox, or Marvel Studios at Fox, not necessarily Fox at Marvel. It's more of a one-shot war right now. But it's really disheartening. Brian, fill people in on the ugly details.
Okay. So this whole mud ball got rolling after Marvel announced their 75th anniversary cover special, where they would introduce special stories and covers and such for different issues. Now, one of the things people noticed was that one of the books left off the initial roster was Fantastic Four.
The original.
The first family of comics. One of Marvel's premier Silver Age books was not being included in a 75th anniversary of the company, and this sort of raised some red flags. Now, it didn't start out this way, but there started to begin to be little rumors floating around that I'll just read a quote for you. The belief inside the higher echelons of Marvel is that promoting these properties in comics only benefits Fox's movies at the expense of those from Marvel Studios, which is why the Inhumans are being pushed as mutant replacements in the Marvel Universe, and Marvel have been pushing Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and other comics over the X-Men. While X-Men comics remain solid sellers, they are no longer the focus of internal promotion unless, as with the upcoming Axis event, the Avengers get equal billing. More news began to pile on, such as the alleged cancellation of Ultimate FF at only issue number 6, when all the little tidbits thrown in with the solicit indicated an end to the Future Foundation, Doomsday Clock counts down, Ultimate Universe's worst nightmare, etc., etc. Now, that was one thing. That was sort of speculation. However, then came this. This was mentioned by, I think it was Tom Brevoort, I believe.
Brevoort,
thank you. Quote, I do a number of sketch card projects for Upper Deck and Rittenhouse using Marvel characters. The most recent projects from both companies, one bill is Marvel's 75th anniversary, gave specific guidelines to not use any FF characters or supporting cast to Doctor Doom, Galactus, Surfer, Skrulls, etc. Here is the list of all the stars they've been told to leave off. The Fantastic Four proper, Doctor Doom, Galactus, Silver Surfer, The Watcher, Skrulls, any derivative. If in doubt, please draw something else. That's how they cap that note off. So, basically, Marvel stifling the Fantastic Four despite Fox Studios and the upcoming Fantastic Four reboot.
I want it to be clear that this is not Marvel editorial. This is not Alex Alonso. This is not the editors. These are the executives. No, because I don't want this distinction that it's Marvel editorial. They have no control over this. If their bosses say don't do that, then they don't do that. So I want—I just want to make this clear. I don't like when misinformation, and I've already seen it get out there. So I want to make that clear for people. This is just disheartening to hear about. If it's true, I mean, it's true, obviously.
Yeah, this is
you know, obviously this wasn't going. These are not the same people who were in charge back when the first Fantastic Four movies were coming out because they were still doing FF stuff, you know. But this is Stan and Jack's book. This is the book that, you know, a lot of you who are listening to this probably have never read the original Stan and Jack Kirby Fantastic Four. All the lexicon and the fabulous things you know about the Marvel Universe, and we talked about this earlier in another podcast maybe a few weeks ago, but a lot of that was birthed out of that run. You know, so many of terminology, so many things that just become familiar to us that, yes, that's the Marvel Universe. That's from Fantastic Four. And to me, these upper executives who I'm going to say are feeling butthurt because they don't get milk money, they don't get the movie money off of it. And let's face it, you're not going to – even with Avengers, they don't draw that many comic readers in to begin with. You know, so – or I don't know if it's licensed because I don't even know how it works with licensing and how much licensing money they get. But, you know, and obviously it's true they don't promote X-Men. You know, like I think Rob Liefeld has said numerous times that, like, look at the toy aisle. You'll see Spider-Man toys. You'll see Avengers toys, but you don't see any new X-Men toys. At least now. Yep. Back then you did, but you don't see them now. And you don't see them anymore. Where are the First Class toys? You know, where were the Days of Futures Past toys? You don't see those. You know, whereas you see Avengers toys out the wazoo. And I can get that. You know, you want to push. But at the same time, you know, and this is where my heart comes into it, and this is why I'll never be a good businessman, is that this is the book that birthed the Marvel Universe, and this is the book that, you know, it's Marvel. It's the first family of comics. You know, I don't care how low it's selling. Fantastic Four not being in print or FF or some iteration of it where it's the four or three of the four or two of the four or whatever. It feels like a lesser Marvel Universe. And I'm saying this as a person who's not a Fantastic Four fan. You know. They're that important to the universe. At least to me, they are. And I get that you're mad. And you know what? Blame the people who made the contracts. You know, I really don't see the ultimate final gain for them to pull the Fantastic Four from things. I really don't understand this move.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And like said, if it weren't, you know, let's put it bluntly, if it weren't for the Fantastic Four, you would not have gotten Spider-Man, you would not have gotten the Avengers, you would not have gotten a lot of stuff.
Because that was, I mean, they were, yeah. Like, to put a little history lesson, Marvel was doing, you know, before Fantastic Four Number One came out, they were just doing monster, like, they were chasing the trend.
Mm-hmm. They were doing monster comics and romance comics, and westerns, that kind of thing.
And they weren't exactly doing well either, so, and Fantastic Four, you know, put them on track and thus allowed them to do these other books and become create these other characters that you have known and love all these years. And even X-Men, you know, like if you actually look at X-Men, they actually did reprints for like 4 years.
Yeah, because X-Men didn't really hit off until the all-new X-Men and when they brought in Storm and all them. Claremont, Byrne, and all them. And, you know, it's just – and. You know, the way when I saw that article, or, you know, when I saw it on Facebook and stuff, I was just like, I just got disgusted. And I'm like, really? You know, you're going to do this because of, you know, that it's because the movie license is somewhere else, you know? And it just, I mean, I know Fantastic Four never has been a strong, I mean, I think the best sales they had for them outside of the Heroes Reborn stuff when Jim Lee was, you know, head of the title was probably John Byrne's run. And I know that they were steady and all that, but I know they were never gangbusters for the last 20 or 30 years, but still they were there. And, you know, they were, you know, icons in the universe. You know, there were certain things that, you know, the Avengers knew that there were certain things that going on. They didn't go to Tony Stark. They went to Reed Richards. You know, because Reed Richards was the guy you went to for the tech and stuff, depending on what level of cosmic stuff that was going on. You had the ever-loving blue-eyed thing. He was the idol of millions, you know. And now that they're just doing this, and like you said, you don't see, you know, they're not promoting X-Men, which surprises the hell out of me, even though, with it being in another studio, I don't understand what they're doing. I don't know what the execs are thinking, And while I understand I can understand what they're trying to do. It's a bitter pill for me. And I'm a long time reader. I mean, I was there when John Byrne's run on FF first came out, and it was probably one of the best. We got lucky. We were spoiled back in the 80s for, people of my age, Taser and I, we had Claremont and Byrne on X-Men for a while. And then Claremont was on X-Men the entire time. You had Byrne doing, writing and drawing Fantastic Four and coming up with some of the best shit that they had done in a while. You had Walter Simonson on Thor, and now it's just like, when you see the past glories, what they could have done, what they could do, and now what they're doing to it now, it's just ridiculous. And I want, if I were to be able to meet the executives, I'd probably want to bitch smack them for doing this, just because, FF, I mean, just like over at the other side of the deal, they keep certain characters because they're the benchmarks. Maybe they don't sell as well or do as well, but they're still there in some form or another. And they're trying to make it where they're not even going to do anything with Fantastic Four anymore in any way, shape, or form.
That's why they're killing the Watcher off.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to try to bring up. Well, thank you for bringing it up for me. I was kind of almost derailing myself. But, that after you hearing that is probably what they're doing, And we're not going to see the, and it's like you said, they're trying to make the mutants now. They're going to use the Inhumans instead, even though, which in some ways doesn't make sense because, it's a Fantastic Four thing. But they are separate enough now, I guess, to where they're going to try to, ride that train and make their own version of the mutant mania again. And it just, I don't know. I'm going to stop because I am starting to babble. And my eyes see red when I think about this. Because I grew up, for the longest time before I really got into, into the X-Men or Avengers, the Fantastic Four was always there for me. They were the people that I read aside from Spider-Man. When I was a 10-year-old, I wanted to either be Spider-Man or Ben Grimm, or the Human Torch, and not Wolverine, not Captain America, not Thor, and they just can't do it anymore, and it just annoys me. I'm gonna stop because I don't want to go off the rails and want to say I want to kill somebody because that's obviously not what I want to do or say, because it would let it would just sound like a disgruntled fanboy. And I think that they need to treat it better, because if it weren't for certain things in play, we wouldn't be seeing all the stuff that we got now with the Avengers and everything else, and without the Fantastic Four. And if they're going to get rid of them, then it's just like, that's just smacking a lot of readers in the face, old or new or whatever. And I think that's another reason why they've been having a hard time keeping the title going right now, because, they just don't seem to want to back it up like they do other characters. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say on it.
Brian, you have anything to say?
I do. Putting aside the numerous contributions in comic speak, canonical entries such as characters introduced, objects, themes, that sort of thing, putting aside all that, I don't understand the logic of this. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. Okay, look, I understand that there are certain things, people you have to adhere to, executives, they're all about the bottom line and earning as much money. And, you know, granted, promoting comic books that you don't have the license to make a movie out of is free publicity, but did you forget the comics come first? That's what this is. The comic books were there first. Everything Stan and Jack did, the house that they built, was comic books. It was not movies based on comic books. And quite honestly, what would Marvel get by canceling this series and not promoting these characters? What would they save in money? Peanuts, okay? That's what we're talking about here. This whole thing that really pisses me off, it's not even about the characters or the quality of the book on the shelf at the moment. It's about money. And I know that sounds trite to say, and it sounds naive when I should be like, it shouldn't be about the money, but it really shouldn't be. These are about characters and stories being told. A family that has been in Marvel since the inception of the modern Marvel universe. They've always been there. Kind of makes me worried about what's in store for the X-Men or even, hell, Spider-Man, you know?
Well, the X-Men are safe because they make money.
Are the X-Men only safe, though, because Bendis is on the title?
No, I really think that, one, the executives don't give a shit who Bendis is. It's no offense to Bendis, but that's just real.
No, I mean, but compared to the likes of James Robinson, who's been hot and cold, who is right now writing the new Fantastic Four series. Now, that whole thing aside, they're not getting any more or less money from Fox.
I mean, they've
over
stated
X-Men.
That the reason that X-Men's not being pushed, but they can't touch the X-Men because it still makes them money. Whereas Fantastic Four, arguably, since they don't make enough money off of it anyways, or at least in terms of the numbers that X-Men pulls in, they can mess with it, which they shouldn't.
It's disgusting. You know, it's really not only that, and it shows a blatant lack of faith in anything done with the Fantastic Four, not even just movie-wise. But look, I don't really have much faith in the coming reboot of Fantastic Four either, but that's not the point. The point is, Fantastic Four has always been there. That sounds simplistic, but it's true. Fantastic Four has always been an important part of the Marvel Universe. And now we're getting people who are shoving them to the side. Like John said, people used to go to Reed Richards for this stuff. Now everyone goes to Tony Stark for this stuff. Mm-hmm. And Hank Pym's moving up in the world now, taking a step up, which I don't hate him for, but it's just all this stuff happening. It's like,
you don't even see the Fantastic Four in Original Sin.
Not at all.
When you would think that their close connections to Uatu,
they're not even running point on the series. They're a background character. Ben Grimm just falls into the story. He's not even written in as an integral part. And who is? I mean, Nick Fury, sure, I don't hate that Nick Fury's in a book, but it's something that really bugs me because it shows that they're not. Maybe it's just the fact that the Marvel Universe is changing, and maybe I just can't see it, but Fantastic Four aren't what they used to be. You know? They're not. And maybe that's on the part of Marvel executives for not giving them the promotion and the space they need to operate or what have you, but they're not what they used to be, you know? And whether it's caused by it or it's going to be caused, I don't know. It really disappoints me when you see this sort of executive bullshit come down, this mandate that says, okay, so these people, these characters, all under the same umbrella, the ones that have been not just integral in their own stories, but in stories across the board in Marvel Comics for years, they just don't do anything with them anymore. Just don't bother. That pisses me off. Where Silver Surfer and Doctor Doom and Galactus don't matter anymore. Where the Watcher dies and Fantastic Four don't even step up themselves.
Yep.
It's really fucking depressing.
And if you are listening to this and you're rolling your eyes, well, then you didn't grow up with the Marvel Universe and you don't understand what it means. Whether or not you're a fan of the Fantastic Four, you know what they mean to the Marvel Universe. And to see, and again, you know what? Hopefully one day this will be rectified. And
what they mean is this, okay? Fantastic Four were at the birth of the Marvel Universe. They are the first family. Their book still holds the byline, world's greatest comic magazine, okay? Uh-huh. These are people that matter. These are characters and stories and things that matter. You want to pull out the Ultimate Nullifier and Original Sin Zero. You want to pull out Uatu. You want to kill him off. You don't want to include the Fantastic Four. You don't want to, you know, promote a villain like Doctor Doom or a hero like Silver Surfer, or it's just really, excuse the Bostonese, it's wicked depressing and it's wicked retarded, okay? That's what this is.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All and PC bullshit aside, it's wicked retarded.
Let us know what you think of the controversy of Marvel Studios and the Fox controversy. So let's move on. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on to our final segment of the show, individual reviews. John, since you are on a time limit basis, not really, but...
In our heads, he is.
Ghost Rider number 3. All new Ghost Rider. I want to hear how this series has become.
Yeah, have they talked about where he got the powers from yet? That's what
That's kind of sort of what I was going to say, is they're kind of explained that, you know, Ghost Rider is not, well, to start off with that, we ended with the set last issue where the guy was freaking out, and then all of a sudden, you know, he sees the Ghost Rider in the reflection of the car and saying, well, you know, no, it's something that what we should do. And starts off with the end of it with them doing the conversation, and, you know, and the Ghost Rider's going, you may ask what I am, but the real question is, what are we? He's like, we are kindred spirits, Robbie. We are unstoppable, everlasting, eternal friends, you and I. Eternal? And the guy goes, well, no, if you die again, we're not. And he says, who died? You did, partner. And I brought you back to life like a guardian angel. You're an angel? Heh, the kid's got a sense of humor. No? What the hell is wrong with you, boy? He said, well, you're Satan then? Nope, try again, Reyes. And turns out that the guy in question looks like he's a human spirit. And he has the same thing, and he wants to have the get revenge on somebody. It just kind of goes from there. So he's like a human spirit that helps him, give him the power. He wants to help him avenge the deal, but I have a feeling it's not, the guy is not who he says he is, you know, aka, you know, him actually being the devil or Zarathos. But anyway, he tells him, you know, just trust in me and we'll go on, and I'll help you get a better life going. You know, use the car as well. And then the guy's like, nope, I think I'm going to get away from this and go on. And well, you see the voice go, don't walk away from this. Trust me, kid. There's never ever a chance to make things right. It's now. And he's like, what are you doing? He's a little louder now. He's like, how do I know I can trust you? Yeah, well, you're about to find out as the car starts up and runs right into him. And and then through him after he changes in automatically into the Ghost Rider. And the guy goes, aha, you see, you, me, this car, we are one and the same. And because the car goes right through him like a ghost, all that. And then he's like, get away from me, maniac, blah, blah, blah. And then, but hey, you know, this is your destiny and my destiny. Let's, you know, the power to forge it right now is to say, you know, do it right now. What do you want to do? And, you know, the guy finally decides, okay, let's go ahead and ride. And it's a human spirit named Eli. And so they get behind the steering wheel and go ahead and start going off to do the vengeance. Meanwhile, after that happens, this group of military people are looking for the drugs that had been missing, and are agents of Mr. Hyde. And Hyde's like all throwing a fit and stuff, you know, why can't they keep this up? I wanted to start a blooming empire, you know, that kind of thing. You know, and he just takes out his aggravation on a vehicle, and then he takes another pill to change back. And They're trying to get the formula off the streets because it's defective, because anybody that takes it becomes, just goes crazy, and then dies. While this is going on, Reyes is back into his normal human form. He's with his brother at a pawn shop trying to buy a new wheelchair, and the pawn guy's like, you know, saying, nope, sorry, you know, this ain't cheap, blah, 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 and you can tell that he's trying to screw him over, and you know, Reyes is looking at him like, you know, with anger, and Ghost Rider's talking to him going, it's to be expected, people are rubbish, Robbie, all of them are rubbish, you know, talking to him in his head, and they take him back to the school, and, you know, does the Peter Parker school thing, and the teacher finally says, hey, I was wanting to know if you could work on my car, because I know you're pretty good with the, you know, doing the vehicle and stuff, and you know, maybe I can go ahead and go over there and go to your business and stuff. And it goes later, the guy comes up, and the owner of the store is, you know, shows that he's been beaten the hell out of. Ghost Rider's car has been stolen, and he's just freaking out. He calls the ambulance for his boss, and you know, the guy is being hurt, and of course the voice is going, people are rubbish, Robbie. I know who did this. And he's like, who, Eli? Tell me who. I can even help you find them. Just give me the word, Robbie. All I need is your trust. Take the power to fight back. And he's like, I trust you, but wait, where's the car? And the car is at this house that these drug dealers had the drugs in it, and I guess that was the original owner of the car. Well, all of a sudden, the guy's trying to act tough with everybody, trying to be all that, and then Mr. Hyde's army kicks in, and Steel tries to say, you need to give us the drugs back, and then, like, okay, confirm, target to kill, and they try to shoot the guy, but the guy just grabs into the bag of drugs, you know, and takes, like, a fistful of drugs and shoves them down his throat, becoming, you know, going all Hulkified, sort of, and, Reyes is going finally just, you know, crazy, and he turns into Ghost Rider, and he's like, hey, who took the car? We're useless without it, and how the hell are we going to get to that? And, you know, the voice inside his head goes, hey, this way, turns into Ghost Rider, and walks through the wall, and goes on while the medical scene people come on the scene to help save the life of his boss. And then you find out that the bad guys are driving the car, and the big drug lord is in the back bleeding out, and they're like, why is it so hot in this car, and blah, 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 and this, and like, hey, roll down the windows, you know, that's one reason, it's just the engine, it builds a lot of heat, and on top of the deal, you see a face forming on top of the car, you know, and it literally being a ghost car, and Ghost Rider takes over the deal, portals his hand through, grabs both the front people, and then throws one up in the air, then just starts beating the ever-loving crap out of the other one. And then he looks up, sees the guy up in the air, falling back down, knees him in the friggin' chin, you know, going, it says crack-a-doom, and you know, like the guy gets bent like a pretzel, you know, being thrown up almost like 10, 20 feet up in the air and landing on Ghost Rider's knee, coming up full force strength. I thought that was kind of a cool scene. And then it ends with both them being knocked out, and then the drug dealer all of a sudden just all hulking out going, hey, you, I'm going to mess you up. And it ends, and it's still the same. The writer was Felipe Smith. The art was done by Trad Moore. And it's still the same art that was in the first one that we all kind of hated, but it's grown on me. And it seems to be fitting more of what they're trying to do. They've semi-sort of established that this isn't Zarathos and or anybody that we know. It's a quote-unquote human spirit that, you know, wants to help Reyes get his, you know, get his vengeance on the people that killed him and all that, you know, kind of like a really bad version of the Crow in some ways. And but it is getting better, but it's still, I don't know, it just, it's not quite getting over the hump, you know, with it being the third issue, and especially with the way things are, right, you know, anymore, and, you know, how people give, like, you know, like maybe a 3-issue try on something, and then they drop it if it don't pick up. Ghost Rider is suffering from now. They're not explaining it fast enough. It's that got that trade-itis going. And I'm liking it. It is a slow build. The, you know, story has been picking up more. We're finally starting to see more of an explanation for the character, which we should have seen more in the first 2 issues. And third one should have kind of sort of revealed who he was and, you know, went full force from there. But I'll give it a 2.5 because it is, it's not as good as the second issue was in terms of, you know, picking up the story, but it's not, you know, first issue blahs either. And but I don't see this title lasting much longer if they keep the route they're going with as slow as they're going. It's going to wind up being a limited series. You know, I have a feeling by 6th or 7th issue they're probably going to end it if they're not, you know, if it don't pick up. So here we go. It definitely would be, it'll be probably something to just wait and see what the, when it comes out and trade. Now we get the full story and you go from there. So I'm probably going to probably do that myself. I think the 3rd issue is probably going to be the last one I pick up, unless there's just like a last desperate, you know, thing to pick up during a week that I can't, you know, for an issue to review on the show. And it's not bad, but it's not good either. It's just kind of in that middle of the road. You know, it's got potential, and that they're not tapping into it. So there you go.
Let's go it off to B-Rye.
Yo. I got Avengers number 30, part 2 of the Original Sin tie-in by Jonathan Hickman, art by Lionel Yu. And, boy. Okay, so, last issue. The Avengers were, Cap and his crew were duking it out with Tony Stark over some ethical dilemma that would, you know, that is basically the Illuminati invited Steve into the fold. They knew what Steve was. They knew what he was about. The second he spoke up, they mind wiped him and punted him from the group. And since then, they've been exploring ways to save their own universe from collapsing into itself by these extra-dimensional forces by sacrificing other universes. Although Tony defends that that's not necessarily the case, but it turns out that during their first mission, the Illuminati, during their first mission with Steve, the time gem shattered and then it pretty much came back together and it bounced them 50 years into the future. That's what happened. So they show up in the future. They're accosted immediately by security drones, so to speak. And after they get the situation handled, you know, they go back to having their beef, I guess, Tony and Steve. You know, as they're in the future fighting off these drones, Tony's like, you know, you broke the time gem, you started all this, and Steve kind of like, yeah, well, you know how you said you wouldn't change a thing you've done? Yeah, well, same thing here, you know? Pretty much, he doesn't regret what happened with the time gem and standing up for himself, et cetera, et cetera, but this was unprecedented, so it kind of took him by surprise. So after they land in the future, they are, of course, immediately accosted by, quote-unquote, the Avengers Union, who have this Earth sector under their protection. And in this Earth Union, we see thus an aged Hyperion, a female Thor wielding what looks like Yarmbjorn from Uncanny Avengers, I believe, a new Captain America, a new Star Brand, a sort of cybernetic Black Widow who appears to be a person of color, and Hawkeye. Old Hawkeye is still there. And what I love about this is that when the group of future Avengers converges on them, they start off this whole professional spiel where it's like, you know, Earth is under protection, you're in violation of multiple peace accords, and have additionally violated all known temporal treaties. And then the Star Brand goes, you're also about a week early. Hey, Clint, do you know what happened here? And old Clint just looks over the scene and he's like, look, it was 5 decades ago. I'm old. I forget things. And so pretty much they've been planning for this, but they're a little bit early. And Clint kind of has a standoff with old Clint where, and I think this is great too, old Clint really grew on me in the course of this older. She was like, you know, he's just like, aim that bow somewhere else, son, okay? We got bigger things to worry about. And Clint being Clint's like, no, I don't think I will. And then old Clint decides to go back with, you know, my memory isn't what it used to be, but I do remember how good I was, and believe it or not, I got better. And they go all arrow to arrow, each one shatters the next, and before you know it, Clint's got an arrow just inches away from his junk. And so he's like, okay, that's definitely me, not a trick. And the first thing Clint says to him was like, so tell me, do I ever get my dog back? Referencing, of course, Matt Fraction's Hawkeye run. And Clint goes, yeah, you get the dog back, but your kids, they can't stand you. And this is really kind of a transitional thing, because they don't stay in this issue this time too long. It's really individual moments of characters with their future selves, so to speak. What you do get, however, is you get Clint updating Cap on what's going to happen next. Pretty much, since he already lived through this, he knows the dealio, and that in a short while, they're going to be forwarded even further into the future as it stands. Clint's been told by future Steve to warn them that tomorrow isn't necessarily a friendly place, and to not expect a warm welcome. And after we get some asides with future Starbrain and future Hyperion, old Clint turns on Tony Stark and goes, hey, Stark, yeah? And he launches an arrow into Tony's shoulder. And then old Clint is on him, slugging him in the face. This is for everyone who died because of you. Wham! And that's for all of us who had to live through it. Crack! And the Avengers are trying to pull old Clint off, but he's in this slick new bodysuit, so I'm guessing he's got some enhanced strength and such. And old Clint kind of goes off on this whole, you know, screaming where it's like, you know, you can stop it! You can go back and you can be fast enough to stop it! And we're not made clear
you
right away.
Turn your fucking lights down! I'm sorry.
We're not made clear about what he's talking about. I assume it's about the incursions of universes onto each other, but I can't be certain. Pretty much what Clint says is that little thing Tony has in his hand, which if you're reading New Avengers, it's a gem that glows when the end of the world, when they're about to be incurred. When another universe is about to crash into theirs, the gem will glow, alerting them to this fact, and they'll be able to jump in and stop it. Well, Clint also says that activating that and jumping out will pull them out of the temporal bubble that you're all caught in, and it will give you enough time to figure out what's wrong and save them from whatever the hell it is that you're saving from. And so Tony does this, that he clenches the gem and he's gone. He's out. And so pretty soon, they're not given a lot of time to recover after that, because pretty much as soon as that happens, the time gem reforms again. And Steve knows they have to go. And someone off panel is caught asking, it's about to happen again, where are we going next? And Clint says, I don't know, this was as far as I made it. And then Cap goes, wait, what? And then we jump again. And all of a sudden, from the point of Cap confronting Tony, we're 422 years in the future in a decked-out look in New York with a massive fucking helicarrier, I guess, looming over the city, although it looks like it's also built into the ground, so it makes you wonder if it's not like a battle station of some sort, but it looks awe-inspiring. And so this was more bickering of Cap and Tony in the beginning, but it evolved into a nice little, you know, this is what's happening to you, go and face it. That sort of an issue. We get Tony leaving the party to hopefully save them or the universe, whatever the hell it is. And we get to see another future timeline happen. Yay. For what it was, I loved the writing of this issue. I loved all the future Avengers, old Clint especially. He was just a badass motherfucker. And I enjoyed the future Starbrand as well, where it's like, it's a woman. And so Starbrand's kind of like, oh, hey, you're Starbrand too, huh? That's pretty cool. And she's like, yeah, yeah, I got this glyph. This is your glyph. Pretty much before you die, you put your hand on my head and you gave me the power. He's like, hold on, die? She's like, yeah, it was magnificent, an amazing, glorious end. He's like, well, that sounds like total shit, lady. What the hell? And also we get old Hyperion confronting new Hyperion and rambling like a madman, too. I'm going to read this verbatim. It's a short little thing, but if you can make any sense of this, please comment on the thread and let me know if you can make sense out of it. Should have known when the worlds crashed together that my place was in the white. Took me too long to figure that out. So listen close, youngster. You gotta venture out. Out there. Into the nowhere. Watch yourself. Build it your way. People can't handle secrets. Not anymore. Too many lies. Truth's too real. And that's it. That's all we get from old Hype Tank. Who is pretty fucking bad chicken. But then old Clint comes back in and socks Tony in the face and everything's better. This issue, I thought, was great. It's not really picking up on the whole Tony Cav confrontation. It's leaning more towards this futuristic story. And we'll see how that pans out. I'm sure it ties back all together, but this issue didn't really focus on that. It focused way more on the, hey, future, you know. I'll give it a... I'll give it a 3.75 out of 5. I'll go decimal points today. Because, like I said, the writing was great for the old characters, even if at points didn't make any fucking sense. I'm sure it made sense in Jonathan Hickman's head. And Lionel Yu's art is beyond reproach. I love his art style so much, so I was glad to see it happen. But like I said, this wasn't really tied back into anything that happened in the last issue, so I'm still waiting to bank in on that. But yeah, 3.75 out of 5 for me. That's Jim B for this one.
All right, and I'm going to wrap this shit up with Original Sin number 2 of 8. The tension just keeps racking up as it seems that the person responsible has been using the, looks like the Mole Man's sort of lair to test out some of the Watcher's eyes, or at least that's what's inferred. Meanwhile, we get more of a chase scene. We jump in the middle of a chase scene between a mindless one whose dialogue, while I understand it's supposed to be serious and they're supposed to be depraved, and not depraved, but, you know, crazed, I can't help but giggle at some of the lines. I must keep running. I must outrun my own desire before it drives me mad. It's just, it's like I go with it, but I have to, that's kind of funny. That's a funny line. Nick Fury gets a cool moment. Reed Richards' leading point. It was really, one of my favorite parts of the book was, no surprise to anybody, the team up of Doctor Strange and Frank Castle in the Dark Dimension, in the Far Beyond the Realms of Man, as it's called. So you sort of have, you know, it's so weird. I'm surprised Frank isn't losing his fucking mind, but shooting a Frank man, they find a demon that has been killed. And Frank is able to tell how long it's been dead, what killed it, and how. And how he's able to find who killed the Watcher, because he's just that badass. Meanwhile, we get a brief glimpse into our villains, one who looks like a woman, another one who's wearing a sheet over his head. Don't know whose identity. They are found out quickly by the Avengers in a great double-page splash, and you see Cole Storm, you see Thor, Human Torch is there, Iceman, you know, just some cool Marvel characters in general, and they take the fight to them. And we introduced to one of our newer characters, or at least I don't know if she's a new character. Her name is Exterminatrix. Oblete Midas, born cursing in 8 languages, trained to kill everything that has ever tried to live, coming for you now, like a steamroller made of butcher knives and barbed wire. So one hardened woman. And it's a sort of in fun fight sequence, playing the Avengers Quinjet crashes. You know, meanwhile, this masked guy is escaping with what looks to be, like, the Thing. Am I the only one who picked up on this? At the very end, like, he's being carried off by this guy in a cloak who looks orange and has blocky textures, like the Thing.
Yeah, I noticed that, too, like a negative thing. You know, he's got, like, the whole fate. I don't know if, like, what the point of that is. Maybe it'll be revealed next issue or something, but yeah.
They're trying to...
I thought something happened to Ben Grimm. I thought I missed something.
It led me to believe that, oh my god, did Ben Grimm help kill the Watcher?
Did they corrupt Ben Grimm? What happened?
But then you clearly see that Ben Grimm is there in the double page splash, you know, along with the other hero, so it's not him. So it turns out they were on the wrong lead and that these people were not the people who killed the Watcher. Meanwhile, they were the Reaper, the benefactors of it. It's not, and it talks about the Eye. No, I don't think so. See, we're not the murderers you're looking for, and this isn't an Eye anymore. Not anymore. It's a bomb full of secrets. And what do bombs do? They go boom. And it's revealed that the orb has the Eye of the Watcher. The orb! The motherfucking orb!
The man who they call out in the book as a Z-list villain.
The last character you're going to think is behind this, is one of the people behind this nefarious plot to use the Watcher's own ability to reveal the Watcher's secrets to the world. Like, it's so obvious when you're like, oh, eyes. But it's the orb. So, yeah. But these are still not the killers. We still don't know who they are. This is just one piece of the puzzle that has been unmasked.
Yeah.
And now shit gets interesting. So I'm still liking it. I'm still liking this event series. I like the sort of... It feels very tense. It doesn't feel like a typical Marvel event. You know, I just have the feeling of dread for all the characters, and I feel like it's only going to get worse as we progress. I give it a 3 out of 5. It was a good, solid second issue. I didn't expect the fucking orb, though. Like, Jesus. The orb.
Yeah, no shit.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I was laughing.
Well, John Fark didn't change anything about his setup in the last 15 minutes or so. He's still at the same place.
Well, with that notion, we don't have a topic this week. If you were wondering what happened to X-Men Days of Future Past due to Taser not being able to make it, we didn't want to do the show without him, so unfortunately you're going to have to wait one more week for it. But rest assured, we will talk about it,
Hopefully we'll get Arnold in on it too, because I know he was excited for it.
And hopefully I'll see in the movie by then too.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, you have to see it, okay?
So we will. Yeah, it's planned. I'm pretty sure we've all seen the movie. Just fortunately we couldn't get together all the day, and I didn't want to do the show without Taser. So hopefully we should see it next week for a special edition for podcast for X-Men Days of Futures Past. No, Darth Primus, I have not seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, nor will I not probably see Amazing Spider-Man 2 at this point.
Heathen! You are a traitor to the cause!
To what cause? The Spider-Man cause?
Yes.
Dude, I think you'd like it. It was pretty good.
I know, it's just, at this point, I don't care. At this point, I don't care. It's been a month.
Well, it's understandable.
It's been a month.
Yeah, it's understandable. So...
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to episode number 166. We will see you all next week, hopefully with 2 episodes of X-Men Days of Futures Past and a regular episode. Have a happy week. Stay warm because summer's here, bitches. Flying cockroaches for everybody.
No! Texas, it's going to be hot again. Like, hot, hot.
If I had a box just for wishes and dreams that had never come true, the box would be empty except for the memory of how they were answered by you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. Looked around enough to know you're the one I want to go through time.
Three, two, one. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you all had a happy Memorial Day, and welcome to yet another... Ah, cut. Damn it. Damn it! Okay, 3, 2, 1. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to yet another episode of the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. We hope you all had a happy Labor Day. Damn it!
Yeah.
You better have this at the end of the show.
Three, two, one.